Thank you for being an amazing supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, home to the history of the Caribbeans. We're excited to have you as a valued member of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, comments, and reviews mean so much to us. They help us reach a wider audience and inspire us to keep sharing these incredible stories. With new episodes released daily, your feedback plays a crucial role in shaping our content and making it even better. Your dedication and enthusiasm drive our mission to document and celebrate the rich history of the Caribbean. We're deeply grateful for your support. Today, we're thrilled to present Cuba Episode 1, a captivating story tracing the journey from the island's earliest settlers to the present day. So sit back, relax, and join us as we guide you through this fascinating chapter in Caribbean history. Enjoy the journey. Chapter 1, The First Footsteps, Cuba's Indigenous Beginnings. The Birth of an Island. Long before the first humans set foot on its shores, Cuba was born from the Earth's restless movements. Millions of years ago, volcanic activity and tectonic shifts pushed land masses above the ocean, forming the lush, mountainous island we recognize today. Over time, Cuba's dense rainforests, sprawling savannas, and fertile plains emerged, creating an environment teeming with life. Rivers carved their paths through limestone hills, and coral reefs thrived along its coasts, making Cuba a prime location for early settlers seeking sustenance and shelter. The island's position at the heart of the Caribbean gave it a unique ecological and geographical significance. As waves of migration swept through the Americas, Cuba would become a crossroads for various indigenous cultures, shaping the island's first civilizations and laying the foundation for a rich, interconnected history. The first arrivals. Archaeological evidence suggests that humans first arrived in Cuba around 400 BCE, possibly earlier. These early settlers were part of a wave of migration that moved from South America, navigating the Caribbean Sea in dugout canoes. Some anthropologists believe they originated from the Orinoco River Basin in present-day Venezuela, while others suggest links to Central America. These pioneers were hunter-gatherers and fisherfolk, relying on the island's abundant natural resources. They lived in small groups, moving between coastal caves and inland rivers where food and water were plentiful. With no written language, their stories, traditions, and knowledge were passed down through oral histories, preserved in myths that would later define their spiritual beliefs. The Taino, Siboney, and Guanahatabe peoples. As centuries passed, three distinct indigenous cultures emerged in Cuba: the Siboney, Guanahatabe, and the Taino. Each group adapted to different parts of the island, developing unique ways of life that reflected their environment. The Siboney. The Siboney people, also known as the Guanajatabe in some accounts, were among the earliest settlers. They lived primarily along the western parts of Cuba, relying on fishing, hunting, and foraging rather than agriculture. Unlike the more advanced Taino, the Siboney had a simple nomadic lifestyle, dwelling in caves and small huts. They used rudimentary tools made from shells and bones and had limited pottery-making skills. Despite their simplicity, the Siboney thrived for thousands of years, living harmoniously with nature. They maintained small fishing villages along the coast, relying on dugout canoes for transportation and trade with neighboring islands. The Guanahatabe. The Guanahatabe, often considered a reclusive and mysterious people, were believed to be the remnants of even earlier inhabitants. They occupied the far western regions of Cuba and lived in isolated communities, resisting assimilation with other indigenous groups. Their society was less developed than the Siboney and Taino, and some scholars argue that they were a pre-agricultural people who relied heavily on foraging. Little is known about their fate, but by the time of Spanish arrival, they had nearly disappeared, either through integration with the Siboney or due to other unknown factors. The Taino. By the time Europeans arrived, the Taino were the dominant indigenous group in Cuba. Originally from the Arawakan-speaking tribes of South America, they migrated northward through the Caribbean, settling in Cuba, Hispaniola, Puerto Rico, and other islands. Unlike the Siboney, the Taino had a highly organized society with advanced agricultural practices, political structures, and spiritual beliefs. The Taino built large villages, some with populations in the thousands. They practiced slash-and-burn agriculture, growing staple crops such as cassava, yuca, maize, beans, squash, and sweet potatoes. Their fishing and hunting skills were also sophisticated, using woven nets, harpoons, and traps to capture fish, turtles, and small mammals. One of their most impressive achievements was the construction of baities, ceremonial plazas where they played a sacred ball game known as baiti. This game was not merely for entertainment, but held religious and social significance, often used to resolve disputes and honor the gods. Daily life and spirituality. The Taino society was structured around caciques, chiefs, who governed villages and ensured the well-being of their people. Beneath them were boheeks, shamans or priests, who served as spiritual leaders and healers, interpreting the will of the gods and guiding religious ceremonies. The social hierarchy also included Natainos, nobles, and Naborias, commoners, with each group fulfilling specific roles in society. Taino spirituality revolved around zimis, sacred spirits represented in carved figurines made of wood, bone, and stone. These zimis embodied nature, ancestors, and powerful deities, and they were worshipped in elaborate rituals involving dance, song, and offerings. The most revered gods included Yukahu, the god of cassava and agriculture, and Atabe, the goddess of fertility and freshwater. The Taino also believed in an afterlife, where souls journeyed to Kobe, the land of the dead. This belief influenced burial customs, where bodies were often buried in a fetal position with offerings to aid them in the next world. Trade and conflict. Cuba's indigenous people were part of a broader Caribbean trade network, exchanging goods such as gold, pottery, cassava bread, and cotton with neighboring islands. Canoes, often carved from massive tree trunks, allowed for long-distance travel, strengthening cultural ties between the Taino of Cuba, Hispaniola, and Puerto Rico. Despite this, tensions existed between different groups. The Caribs, a warlike people from the Lesser Antilles, were known for their raids on Taino settlements. These conflicts fostered defensive innovations, including fortified villages and alliances between tribes. The arrival of a stranger. On October 27, 1492, Christopher Columbus and his crew arrived on Cuba's northeastern coast. Believing they had reached the outskirts of Asia, they marveled at the island's beauty, describing it as the most beautiful land ever seen by human eyes. At first, interactions between the Taino and the Spaniards were peaceful. The indigenous people welcomed the newcomers with hospitality, offering food, gold trinkets, and shelter. However, the Spaniards' hunger for wealth and dominion soon shattered this fragile peace. The last free days. As Columbus and his men ventured further inland, the Taino began to realize that these foreigners were not merely passing visitors. With them came strange weapons, diseases, and a thirst for conquest that would forever change Cuba's fate. The chapter ends with a foreboding sense of the impending catastrophe, the final moments of a free indigenous Cuba standing on the edge of irreversible change. Chapter 2, Conquest and Catastrophe, The Spanish Invasion, 1492-1600, A New Dawn, A Darker Fate. The moment Christopher Columbus and his men stepped onto Cuban soil in 1492, the fate of the island's indigenous peoples was sealed. What began as a peaceful exchange of goods and customs quickly spiraled into a harrowing conquest that would alter the trajectory of Cuba forever. The Spaniards, driven by the promise of gold and power, brought with them not only steel and horses but also disease and warfare, elements that the Taino, Siboney, and Guanahatabe peoples had never encountered. In the coming decades, the island would be transformed from a thriving indigenous homeland into the beating heart of Spain's colonial ambitions in the Caribbean. The Second Voyage of Columbus, 1493-1494. Columbus's first visit to Cuba in 1492 was fleeting, but on his second voyage in 1493, his mission had changed. No longer was he simply an explorer. Now, he was the harbinger of empire. This voyage saw the arrival of more settlers, soldiers, and priests, all with a singular goal: to claim Cuba and the rest of the Caribbean for the Spanish crown. Though Columbus himself never established a permanent colony on the island, his reports back to Spain painted Cuba as a land rich in resources, ripe for conquest. The Catholic monarchs, Ferdinand and Isabella, granted their approval for further expeditions, ensuring that the land would soon fall entirely under Spanish control. The beginning of Spanish rule. In 1511, Diego Velázquez de Cuellar, a seasoned Spanish conquistador, was appointed to lead the first official Spanish settlement of Cuba. With an army of mercenaries and enslaved natives from Hispaniola, he launched an aggressive campaign to bring the island under Spanish control. This campaign was met with fierce resistance from the Taino people, led by the now legendary cacique, Chief Otway. Otway, having witnessed the brutality of the Spanish in Hispaniola, had fled to Cuba in an effort to warn his people of the impending invasion. He gathered warriors from different Taino settlements and launched a guerrilla resistance against the Spaniards. Despite their determination, Otway and his warriors were vastly outmatched by the European weapons and military tactics. After months of fighting, Otway was captured, and in 1512, he was burned alive by the Spanish in the town of Yara. As he faced his executioners, he was reportedly given the chance to convert to Christianity and be granted a place in heaven. His response was chillingly defiant. "If heaven is where Spaniards go, I want no part of it." The destruction of indigenous Cuba. Otway's execution marked the beginning of the systematic destruction of Cuba's indigenous population. The Spanish imposed the encomienda system, which essentially turned the Taino and Siboney into forced laborers. Those who resisted were either killed or subjected to brutal punishments. Those who did not resist often perished due to European diseases such as smallpox, influenza, and measles. Within just a few decades, the indigenous population of Cuba was nearly eradicated. The loss of the native population created a labor crisis for the Spanish settlers, leading them to turn to the African slave trade. By the mid-16th century, large numbers of enslaved Africans were being transported to Cuba to work on sugarcane and tobacco plantations. This marked the beginning of a new, tragic chapter in Cuba's history, one where the island became a central hub in the transatlantic slave trade. The rise of Havana and Spanish expansion. Despite the bloodshed and suffering, Spanish rule cemented Cuba's place as a critical part of Spain's growing empire. In 1519, Havana was officially founded and quickly became the most important city in the Caribbean. Its strategic location made it a key stopover for Spanish ships transporting gold and silver from the Americas back to Spain. Massive fortifications were constructed to protect Havana from pirates and foreign invaders, turning the city into a military and economic stronghold. While the Spanish elites grew wealthy from Cuba's resources, the indigenous survivors, African slaves, and lower-class Spaniards bore the brunt of this new colonial order. The island had been transformed, its original inhabitants decimated, its land reshaped for European profit, and its destiny irrevocably tied to the ambitions of a distant crown. A legacy of resistance. Though the Spanish conquest of Cuba was swift and ruthless, it was never absolute. Resistance remained a constant undercurrent of Cuban society. Whether it was the last Taino warriors fighting in the mountains, the African slaves who would later rebel, or the Cuban-born Creoles who began to question Spanish rule, the spirit of defiance endured. This chapter of Cuban history is one of both tragedy and transformation. It is the story of a land torn from its native people, yet also of the resilience that would define Cuba in the centuries to come. The echoes of Otway's final words would never be forgotten, setting the stage for future revolutions and the ongoing struggle for Cuban identity. Chapter 3. The Sugar Empire, The Rise of Slavery and Wealth, 1600 to 1800, The Dawn of the Sugar Era. As the 17th century unfolded, Cuba began its transformation from a mere stopover for Spanish fleets into a thriving economic powerhouse. While gold and silver defined Spanish conquests in Mexico and Peru, Cuba's wealth would come from another source, sugar. By the mid-1600s, sugar plantations sprawled across the island, turning it into one of the most profitable colonies in the Spanish Empire. However, this prosperity came at an enormous human cost. To fuel the demand for sugar production, the Spanish crown turned to the transatlantic slave trade, forever altering the demographics and social fabric of Cuba. The expansion of sugar plantations. Cuba's fertile soil and tropical climate made it ideal for cultivating sugarcane. Early Spanish settlers had already experimented with the crop in the 1500s, but it was not until the 1600s that sugar became the dominant industry. European markets clamored for sugar, which was increasingly used in food, beverages, and even medicine. Recognizing the potential profits, Spanish landowners invested heavily in expanding plantations, creating a vast network of fields, mills, and refineries. The Spanish government, eager to bolster Cuba's economy, provided incentives for settlers willing to cultivate sugar. These included land grants and tax exemptions, encouraging ambitious landowners to establish massive haciendas dedicated solely to sugar production. The success of the industry, however, hinged on the availability of cheap, expendable labor, a need that would soon be filled through the forced migration of enslaved Africans. The transatlantic slave trade in Cuba. With the indigenous population nearly wiped out due to disease and forced labor, Spanish plantation owners turned to the African slave trade. Between the 17th and 18th centuries, thousands of enslaved Africans were transported to Cuba, primarily from the West African coast. The Spanish crown legalized the slave trade in its Caribbean colonies, establishing Cuba as a key hub in the transatlantic network. Enslaved Africans endured horrific conditions. Packed into overcrowded ships for months, many did not survive the journey. Those who did were immediately subjected to backbreaking labor upon arrival. Sugar plantations required intense, grueling work, with enslaved workers toiling from sunrise to sunset under the watchful eyes of overseers. The brutal regimen included cutting cane, processing the stalks in mills, and boiling the extracted juice into crystallized sugar. Many perished from exhaustion, malnutrition, and disease, yet the Spanish continued to import more enslaved people to replace those who died. The social hierarchy and racial divisions. By the 1700s, Cuba had developed a rigid social hierarchy based on race and class. At the top sat the Spanish-born elite, or peninsulars, who controlled the colony's wealth and political power. Below them were the criollos, Cuban-born Spaniards, who owned much of the land but were still subordinate to those born in Spain. Beneath them were the mestizos, mulattoes, and free blacks, many of whom worked as artisans, small-scale farmers, or traders. At the very bottom were the enslaved Africans, whose lives were dictated by the whims of their masters. Despite their status, some free black and mixed-race individuals carved out a niche in Cuban society. Some were able to purchase their freedom, while others found work in skilled trades or even became landowners themselves. Still, racial divisions remained deeply entrenched, and laws were crafted to ensure that people of African descent remained marginalized and subservient. Resistance and rebellion. Though the Spanish sought to control every aspect of the enslaved population's lives, resistance was a constant undercurrent. Enslaved Africans frequently rebelled, running away from plantations to establish palenques, maroon communities, in Cuba's remote mountains and forests. These settlements, formed by escaped slaves, became symbols of defiance and freedom, often launching attacks against Spanish authorities. One of the most famous palenques was El Cabra, a community that not only provided refuge for escaped slaves, but also played a crucial role in shaping Cuban identity. Spanish officials periodically launched military campaigns to destroy these settlements, but new ones always emerged. Secret religious and cultural practices also served as acts of defiance. African spiritual traditions blended with Catholicism, giving birth to Santeria, a syncretic faith that allowed enslaved people to maintain connections to their heritage while outwardly adhering to Spanish-imposed Christianity. Music, dance, and oral storytelling further helped preserve African identity in a foreign land. The role of Havana in global trade. By the 18th century, Havana had cemented its status as a crucial hub for Spanish trade. The city's deep natural harbor made it a vital stopping point for Spanish treasure fleets carrying gold, silver, and goods between the Americas and Spain. Recognizing its importance, the Spanish crown heavily fortified Havana, constructing massive defensive structures such as El Moro Castle and La Cabana Fortress to protect against pirates and foreign rivals. Trade flourished in Havana, with merchants dealing in sugar, tobacco, and slaves. While Spain remained the primary trade partner, Cuba also engaged in illicit commerce with British, Dutch, and French ships, often smuggling goods to bypass Spanish trade restrictions. This economic boom further enriched Cuba's elite, while deepening the reliance on the exploitative plantation system. Economic power and the path to change. By the late 1700s, Cuba had become one of the wealthiest Spanish colonies, largely thanks to sugar exports. However, the global landscape was shifting. The Haitian Revolution, 1791-1804, which led to the abolition of slavery in nearby Saint-Domingue, modern-day Haiti, sent shockwaves throughout the Caribbean. Plantation owners in Cuba feared similar uprisings, leading to increased restrictions on enslaved people and harsher enforcement of Spanish rule. At the same time, ideas of Enlightenment philosophy, emphasizing liberty and self-governance, began taking root among Cuba's educated classes. While many Cuban landowners still benefited from the plantation economy, whispers of independence and reform started to circulate, foreshadowing the revolutionary movements that would come in the following century. Conclusion: a nation built on suffering and wealth. The sugar empire of 17th and 18th century Cuba was built on an intricate web of economic prosperity and human suffering. While Cuba flourished as a global trade hub, its foundation rested on the exploitation of enslaved people, creating deep social divisions that would shape its future struggles for independence and equality. Chapter 4, Whispers of Rebellion, The Seeds of Revolution, 1800 to 1868. The Winds of Change, A Shifting Landscape. By the dawn of the 19th century, Cuba had become one of the most valuable colonies in the Spanish Empire, fueled by its booming sugar industry. Yet beneath this economic prosperity lay deep fractures. The rigid social hierarchy, entrenched racial divisions, and the brutal system of slavery created widespread discontent. Meanwhile, the world around Cuba was shifting. The success of the American Revolution, 1775 to 1783, the French Revolution, 1789 to 1799, and the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804, reverberated across the Caribbean, inspiring enslaved people, free blacks, and even some criollos, Cuban-born Spaniards, to question their subjugation under Spanish rule. The Haitian Revolution and its impact on Cuba. The Haitian Revolution sent shockwaves throughout the Caribbean. Enslaved Africans in Saint-Domingue, modern-day Haiti, overthrew their French colonial rulers, establishing the first independent black republic in the Americas. For Cuban plantation owners, the specter of a similar uprising on their own soil was terrifying. In response, they tightened restrictions on enslaved people, increased military presence on plantations, and passed harsh laws to suppress any sign of rebellion. However, the revolution in Haiti also had unintended economic benefits for Cuba. As Haiti's sugar production collapsed due to the war, European markets turned to Cuba to fill the gap. This led to an explosion in sugar production, reinforcing Cuba's reliance on slavery, but also increasing its economic significance to Spain. Wealthy Criollo landowners, growing ever more powerful, began to see themselves as distinct from their Spanish overlords. The rise of Criollo nationalism. As the 19th century progressed, Cuba's Criollo elite began to develop a unique sense of identity separate from Spain. These landowners, intellectuals, and merchants benefited from Cuba's economic prosperity, but were frustrated by Spain's monopolistic control over trade and governance. The Spanish crown imposed heavy taxes and limited Cuba's ability to trade freely with other nations, stifling economic growth. Inspired by Enlightenment ideals of liberty, equality, and self-rule, some Criollos began advocating for greater autonomy from Spain. Newspapers, pamphlets, and secret societies spread ideas of reform and independence, though outright rebellion remained a distant dream, for now. Suppression and control. Spanish rule grows more oppressive. Spain was well aware of the growing nationalist sentiment in Cuba and took measures to maintain control. The Spanish authorities increased surveillance, censored publications, and cracked down on suspected revolutionaries. The Catholic Church, deeply intertwined with colonial rule, reinforced Spanish dominance by promoting loyalty to the crown. In 1825, Spain granted its colonial governor in Cuba extraordinary powers through the Real Cédula de Gracias, allowing him to rule with near-dictatorial authority. This move was designed to suppress dissent and prevent any revolutionary outbreaks, but it only fueled resentment among the Cuban elite. Slave resistance and the underground struggle. While Criollo landowners debated political reform, enslaved Africans and free blacks engaged in their own forms of resistance. Runaway slaves, known as Cimarrones, established hidden settlements called palenques deep in the mountains and forests, where they lived in defiance of Spanish rule. Some of these communities launched guerrilla-style attacks on plantations, freeing enslaved people and disrupting sugar production. Secret abolitionist movements also began to emerge in urban centers like Havana and Santiago de Cuba. Influenced by anti-slavery activists in Europe and the United States, Cuban abolitionists faced harsh persecution from Spanish authorities, who viewed any challenge to slavery as a threat to the island's economic stability. The role of international influences. Cuba's proximity to the United States meant that political ideas and movements from North America frequently found their way onto the island. Some Cuban elites entertained the idea of annexation by the U.S., believing it would provide economic opportunities and possibly lead to a gradual end to slavery. Others, however, feared that annexation would simply replace one colonial master with another. Meanwhile, Spain's power was waning. Across Latin America, Spanish colonies were declaring independence throughout the early 19th century. By 1830, most of South America was free from Spanish rule, leaving Cuba and Puerto Rico as Spain's last major strongholds in the Americas. Cuban revolutionaries closely watched these developments, drawing inspiration from the struggles of Simón Bolívar and other independence leaders. The conspiracies for independence begin. By the 1830s and 1840s, various secret organizations began forming in Cuba with the goal of overthrowing Spanish rule. Among them was the Sons and Rays of Bolívar, an underground movement dedicated to spreading revolutionary ideals. Spanish authorities aggressively targeted these groups, imprisoning or executing suspected revolutionaries. One of the most notable figures to emerge during this period was José Antonio Sacco, a Cuban intellectual who advocated for gradual reform and the abolition of slavery. While Sacco did not support immediate independence, his writings laid the ideological groundwork for later revolutionary movements. The growing divide, reform versus revolution. By the mid-19th century, Cuban society was deeply divided between those who sought gradual reform within the Spanish system and those who believed only armed rebellion could achieve true freedom. The Spanish government attempted to appease the reformists with minor concessions, such as allowing limited political representation for Cuban elites, but these measures failed to quell the growing unrest. The final straw came in the 1860s when Spain, struggling with internal instability, increased taxes on Cuban exports to fund its own military campaigns in Europe. This move infuriated Cuban landowners, who saw it as yet another example of Spain exploiting the colony for its own gain. The spark of rebellion, the path to the 10 Years' War. By 1868, the tensions that had been simmering for decades finally erupted into open conflict. On October 10, 1868, a landowner named Carlos Manuel de Céspedes issued the Grito de Yara, the official call for Cuban independence. Céspedes freed his slaves and called on all Cubans to join the fight against Spanish rule. Thus began the 10 Years' War, 1868 to 1878, the first major war for Cuban independence. The war would be long and brutal, marking the beginning of a relentless struggle that would define Cuba's path toward freedom. Though the revolutionaries faced overwhelming odds, the seeds of independence had been sown, and there was no turning back. Conclusion: the birth of a revolution. The period from 1800 to 1868 was one of profound transformation for Cuba. Economic prosperity masked deep societal fractures, and the ideals of independence took root in both the minds of elite landowners and the hearts of enslaved people. Spanish repression only strengthened the resolve of those who yearned for freedom. As the island stood on the precipice of war, it became clear that Cuba's destiny would no longer be dictated by Madrid alone.